We want to touch on a bit of a difficult passage today. Perhaps not the most difficult in the world, but certainly one that gives some people some trouble, and probably at one point or another in your life has been something that you've struggled with. Almost everyone has. And when I say almost everyone, I mean everyone except Jesus, which is almost everyone. We want to discuss this morning the danger of going to extremes. Benjamin Franklin said, "Don't be the first to try something new, nor the last to give up the old." And certainly in many areas of life that is true. Certainly would be exceptions to that. When it comes to Christianity, even if everyone else in the world did give it up, we wouldn't want to give that up. That would be something that we would hang on to, even if everyone else didn't. But certainly, in many areas of our lives, we see how foolish it is for people. They run out there and try the greatest, latest, best, new, whatever, and before long, it's gone bust, and they are disappointed they ever tried. So sometimes it's best to let somebody else be the guinea pig. But then we also see that sometimes people are hanging on to something that is just archaic, something that should have been done away with a long time ago. And yet they continue to cling to it and won't let go. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5 says, "Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand." Now when we think about moderation, we think about the opposite of going to extremes. Someone who is moderate, a moderator, anything that we moderate something, it keeps it from the extremes. It keeps it in the comfort zone, so to speak. We have a thermostat over here that's job is to moderate the temperature in this building so that it's not too cold in the winter and not too hot in the summer. And we're glad for that moderation. We wouldn't want to come when it was 100 degrees in here. We wouldn't want to come if it was 30 degrees in here. We like it to be right around 70 to 75 all the time. It's a little more comfortable for us. But when it comes to our Christian life, we need to have some moderation. We need to not go to excess or to extremes in several areas. And we want to look at some of those this morning. Don't be tempted by extremes in these areas. Because sometimes the extremes can be tempting to us. I want to first notice, don't be tempted by extremes in entertainment and recreation. We hear about extreme sports are a popular thing right now. There are certainly video game addictions. There's all sorts of glorified depictions of sin out there in the media. Now, on the other side of that, there are those who say, well, if you're a Christian, you can never do anything of entertainment or recreation. I actually read a book by a fellow who, boy, he wanted you to have your day planned out second by second so that there wasn't one moment that you weren't doing something that was productive, that was moving you toward accomplishing some task or another. Now I'm all for not wasting time, and I know a lot of us have a problem on the other end of that where we waste a lot of time with too much entertainment and recreation, but I think he went too far to the other extreme. And I think Jesus took time to go fishing with his disciples. Jesus took time to go rest. Jesus took time to go to a wedding, although I might rather be at work. But Jesus took some time out to do some of these things that we would call entertainment or recreation. And in fact, that's a very important part of life. It's possible for someone to work themselves to death. But in that entertainment, in that recreation, we need to be sure that we're not engaging in sinful things. We need to be sure that we have moderation there. Acts chapter 19 and verses 18 through 19 says that many that believed came and confessed and showed their deeds, and many of them also which used curious arts. Now that's not art like drawing on or painting or something like that. It's talking about witchcraft. But some people think of that as entertainment and recreation today. But many of them which used curious arts brought their books together and burned them before all men. And they counted the price of them and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. It may be that if we examine our lives, we'll find that there's some entertainment or recreation that we're involved in that needs to be burned. Now, it may not, I don't mean literally, but maybe even literally. But we need to get rid of it out of our lives. These people saw that this particular thing they were doing, and they were probably doing it beyond entertainment and recreation. They had probably gotten to the point where it was like another religion to them, as many have. But many people today get involved in all sorts of sinful things as entertainment and recreation. We need to be aware of that and not go to those extremes. We need to stay away from it. It's not to say we can't ever watch a movie, but boy, there are a lot of them that a Christian doesn't need to watch. Doesn't mean we can't go to certain activities, but boy, there are some that Christians don't need to be there. We need to consider that and show moderation and not go to those extremes. We need to consider the danger of being tempted by extremes in fashion and style. Now, to some degree, there's nothing wrong with being fashionable. None of us want to look like we're dressed from the 1700s. We mentioned this morning in class, the men wearing their powdered wigs and their little stockings. I think we'd look pretty silly if we still dressed like that. But at the same time, we need to beware of extremes. We need to beware of thinking that whatever they do in Paris or in New York on the runways is what we've got to have. It's not the case. In fact, Romans 12:2 says, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." You know, the thing about fashion and style is if you try to keep up with the latest fashions and styles, you'll go broke. Because there's a new one every week. And whatever was the hot thing last week, that's old now. You're out of style already. If you keep it for a while, it'll come back, you know. But if we can stick with some of the classic things that just never seem to go out of style. And we're safe in most places. We may not be the hippest, coolest, but we fit in fairly well in most circumstances, well enough. We don't have to conform to this world and their view of how things ought to be. I'm reminded of the passage in Colossians where we are warned about the dangers of the man-made rules and regulations. We were talking about it just this morning. I was putting some white shoes on Keturah for church, and I said, "Now, Dawn, are you sure? Because I think you're not supposed to wear white after Memorial Day." She said, "No, that's Labor Day." And I said, "Oh, well, you know." And then we kind of laughed out. We said, we don't follow those rules anyway. The rules of the world that say, touch not, taste not, handle not, you can't do this, you can't do that. Now, we don't go out of our way to be contrary to people, but we're not bound by their fashion sense. Who decided you couldn't wear white after Labor Day? Where is that written? I didn't see that in the Bible. Who decided that? Who got to vote on that? Who got to decide that your belt has to match your shoes and all these? I mean, they got all sorts of rules and regulations for fashion, really? Well, God has some rules. We're to be modest. Well, we'd be modest then. And not get carried away with these extremes of fashion and style. What about politics? Boy, there are some extremes in politics, aren't there? And getting more extreme every day. Proverbs 24, 21 and 22, Solomon warned his son about that. He said, "My son, fear thou the Lord and the king, and meddle not with them that are given to change. That means they're addicted to it. That means they are extremes in the area of politics. They want to have a revolution. For their calamity shall rise suddenly, and who knoweth the ruin of them both? Now, see, we've got to watch out for those extremes. Now, certainly, does God care what we believe about certain things? Yes, He does. He cares a lot. But we've got to beware of the extremism that's out there. Because there are people in our society today screaming and hollering for overthrows of the government and violent rebellion and all these sorts of things. And as Christians, that's not our role. Our job is to be the light of the world, the city that's set on the hill. And not to try to rule the world through politics, but to change the world through Christianity, through the gospel. Nothing wrong with being politically active and voting, and even I know some have campaigned. I know some Christians who have even run for office. Of course, I know on one occasion when James Garfield was from the church was elected to be president, someone asked David Lipscomb, who the founder of Lipscomb University up in Nashville, asked him about what he thought about that. Now, Lipscomb was one who didn't believe in getting involved in politics at all. He had a lot to say about, since our citizenship is in heaven and not of this world, don't get involved. But somebody asked him what he thought about that, about James Garfield becoming president, and he said, well, he was a good man. He considered the corruption that comes with that so many times. But I suppose maybe it's possible for a Christian to be in politics and not get corrupted, but it'd have to be tough. They'd have to be strong. But we've got to beware not to go to the extremes. And you know, some have said, well, you know, like David Lipscomb even kind of went to the other extreme and said, well, you're a Christian, you can't even vote. Well, that's a little extreme, isn't it? So if a bill comes up on whether we're going to kill unborn babies or not, we're Christians, we shouldn't vote on that. Whether a bill comes up about gambling or about alcohol or about, you know, we shouldn't even vote on that. Wait a minute. We need to speak up for what is right and what is good, but we just need to be careful not to go to extremes. What about in the area of finances? There's danger there. There are several dangers there. One danger is that there are some who have somehow come to the conclusion that all wealth is evil. Money's bad. And if you've got money, you're a wicked person. I think that would be a surprise to people like Job and Abraham, David. There were many who were wealthy in the Scriptures, and they were very godly people. I think they'd be surprised to know how wicked they were just because they had some money. Well, on the other side of that, though, is that group of people who worships money, who thinks that's all there is to life, and how big your bank account is determines how important you are, and that's certainly not right either. 1 Timothy 6:17 warns, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. On another occasion, there was a poorer man who came because there was an inheritance and his brother had gotten the inheritance and came to Jesus and he said, tell him he's got to split it with me. And first Jesus said, what? I'm not a judge between you about that. But then he said, let me tell you this story. And he said, he then told them a parable to warn them of the dangers of covetousness. The dangers of being jealous of somebody else because they got more money than you've got. That's a danger. It's an extreme. And there are people in our society today who think if somebody else has more money than them, they ought to be able to just take it away from them. That's an extreme. We've got to beware of the danger of going to extremes in the areas of health and food issues. Now, sometimes, for health, the doctor may tell somebody they have to do some extreme things. You know, they may tell somebody, you can't ever have any sugar again because you're with diabetes or something. Or they may tell somebody, look, you've really got to cut back on this or that or that. They may do that. And it's probably a good idea to listen to that. If they're telling you that, it's a pretty serious thing you're in. But we've got to beware not to be trying to bind these things on others and trying to tell them what they have to do. And of course, we have to beware how far we go with all of these things. 1 Corinthians 10:27 says, if any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and ye be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience sake. I'm glad he added that last part, for conscience sake. I was talking to a fellow who's a missionary in Indonesia. And he talked about they went and somebody served them a meal. And I said, you ate it without questioning, right? The Bible says eat without questioning. He said, no, I asked him what that was. He said, I want to know what was in that because some of the things over there will make you sick if you eat them. They eat rats and all sorts of things over there. He told a story about one family over there that they were raising a pigeon. They were keeping it in their apartment in a cage to eat it. And their neighbor's cat got into their apartment and ate the pigeon. And you know what they did? They ate the cat. So they have a few different dietary habits over in some parts of the world than we have here. But he says for conscience sake. Now he's particularly talking here about people were concerned that this particular meat might have been offered to an idol before it was served to them. And he said, don't worry about it. It's meat. God made the meat. You know God made the meat. Just eat the meat. Now he says, now if they tell you, if they set it there and they say, we offered this to idols, you going to eat some? Then he said, don't eat it then. Don't eat it if they tell you. They're trying to cause a problem then. But he said, whatever's sold out there in the marketplace, you know, there's a big outrage right now, especially in Great Britain. Because over there, the Muslims have influenced, in certain areas, there's a large enough proportion of them that some of the meats that are sold, and even in some restaurants, the meats that are served are what they call halal meat. In other words, they said a blessing over it. Now, they prayed for it. They, in other words, similar to offering it to an idol so that it would be pure for the Muslims to eat it. And people are all in an uproar. Well, they got that meat in the grocery store. Well, it's still meat. It's still here. And I think we may run into that at some point where, you know, we just go buy the meat and eat the meat. And quit. Don't worry about what they... If they prayed over that meat, it's not going to change the fact that that meat is still meat. They can't change that. But now somebody says, yeah, we're offering this meat, we're praying, this meat's for Allah. You going to eat some of it? Then it's like, no, I'm not going to eat some of that then for you. They're questioning and challenging and pushing you in those areas. But we have to avoid the extremes. We need to beware of being tempted by extremes in areas of sexuality. Our society has corrupted God's plan for the husband and wife in so many different directions that we can't begin to touch on all of them. Jude 1 and verse 7 says, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Those people in Sodom and Gomorrah were doing a lot of the immoral things that we're doing in our society today. And God made an example of them. We talked about memorials in class this morning. Sodom and Gomorrah ought to be a memorial to us in America today. Because the sins of Sodom are some of the same sins we have in America today. We need to beware of that. We're headed down that same road that leads to destruction and eternal fire. But then on the other side, you got those that say, oh, you can do anything. Well, then there are those who just try to tell people they can't do anything at all. In 1 Corinthians 7, 8, and 9, Paul says to the unmarried and widows, it's good for them if they abide even as I. But if they cannot contain themselves, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. And you've got some, especially in certain religious organizations that say, oh, they can't get married. You can't get married. Well, Paul told Timothy that one of the evil things that people were going to do was forbid marrying. Marriage was God's plan. Now, he says, it'd be great if you can be like me and not get married. That's wonderful. But he said, not everybody can. Not everybody's got that ability. Not everybody's got that gift. And instead of going out there and being immoral, get married if you can't contain yourself. But we've got to watch out for some of the extremes. I remember having a discussion with an elder one time about whether a preacher has to be married or not. Maybe it's just kind of a reaction against the Catholic Church and their priests that can't get married. But it almost seems like they said, well, you can't be a preacher if you're not married. Well, Paul was a preacher and he wasn't married. Well, it was a different day and age. Well, maybe it was, but you know, I think there are some men who may have that gift. I'm not one of them. If I hadn't got married, I'd probably be dead by now. But no telling what would have happened to me. But some men may be able to have that gift to be able to not be married and to be faithful to God. I know one of the is a young man that preached over in the southwestern part of the state that I got to be good friends with. He wasn't married. He preached. He did a good job preaching, working in the community. I know there are advantages to having a wife and family. There's disadvantages to it too. But to try to bind things like that on somebody, it just doesn't fit with what the Scriptures tell us. Then we think about being tempted by extremes in verbal expression. James 1:26 says, if any man among you seem to be religious and bridleth not his tongue, he deceiveth his own heart, and this man's religion is vain. Ephesians 4:15 says, but speaking the truth in love, grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. Now both of these passages talk to us about controlling our tongues, controlling our words, how we speak things, what we say. There are some people who speak the truth, but they speak it in hatred. And that doesn't benefit anybody. It doesn't benefit the person speaking the truth. It certainly doesn't benefit the person hearing the truth. But then there are those who just won't bridle their tongue. They just let loose. They say anything and everything. There has to be some governance on that tongue. There has to be some moderation. Then on the other hand, there really are some extremes of some people who, boy, any least little thing. I know we discussed euphemisms one day in class about people say one thing instead of something else. And there are some people who say, okay, well, this is the cuss word. Okay, that's bad. Won't say that. Well, here's a euphemism. Well, that means the same thing, so you can't say that. Well, here's something. Well, that might mean something else, so you can't say that. And it gets ridiculous. So much so I heard something this past week that on the BBC they had a news report. A fella got wrestled down by the 19-year-old judo champion. Well, she just wrestled him down to the ground, and he said, "Well, this is embarrassing. My friends may never let me live this out, you know, because." He said, they'll never let me forget about this. I got beat by a 19-year-old girl. You know what? They edited the word girl out like he'd said something bad. What? That's ridiculous. Oh, this political correctness where you can't say any word. This word might hurt somebody's feeling. There was a fellow who worked for ESPN who was talking about the weakness of a particular team, and he referred to the chink in the armor. They fired him because they said it was a racial slur against the Chinese. He wasn't talking about it. It didn't have anything to do with that. But that's the direct... We've gone to such extremes with verbal expression that you can't say anything without somebody getting offended by it. And then, of course, you have people that do go too far. They want to say everything just to offend everybody. They go out of their way to try to say things that are offensive. And we don't need to be going to extremes in either direction on that. There are those that go to extremes in the area of theology. Acts 17:22 and 23, Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill and said, "Ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things ye are too superstitious. For as I passed and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription, To the unknown God, whom therefore ye ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you." That would have been quite a sight to see Mars Hill. I wonder how many different altars and idols they had set up there. They had their theology. They didn't want to leave anybody out. Sound familiar? Sounds kind of like the direction we're going. Every religion is just as good as every other religion. No, it's not. They're not the same. But boy, they had an altar for every god. Every one of them. Even they were so concerned about, they even had an altar for a god in case there was a god they didn't know about. Well, here's the altar for him. Paul said, "You know, here you are. You got all the. You are too superstitious. Some translations say you are too religious." But their theology was so confused that the one true God was the one they didn't know about. They didn't even know about him. He was the one that was unknown. They had that altar to him, but they sure didn't know him. Then what about emotional reactions? You ever seen anybody go to extremes with emotional reactions? Now that happens a lot when we're 2 or 3 years old, doesn't it? Oh yeah. But you'd think by the time we get grown, we'd be able to control that a little better. We wouldn't go to those extremes. But no, some people still do. Ephesians 4:17 through 19, Paul describes the Gentiles. He says they have their understanding darkened, and that they have, because of the blindness of their heart, he says in verse 19, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. They were beyond feeling. They didn't have any feelings at all. They're kind of like the Vulcans on Star Trek. They purged out all their emotions. Well, God created us with emotions. He expects us to have emotion. But He doesn't expect us to let our emotions rule us. These people had gotten beyond feeling, though. There have been certain serial killers, certain mass murderers, who have talked about that. One in particular said that the reason he went out and killed a bunch of people was because he just didn't feel anything. He just was dead inside, and he wanted to feel something. So he went out and killed somebody and thought that would help him feel something. That's a dangerous place our society has gotten to, where people are beyond feeling. And they were there in the New Testament too. It's not a new thing. But then in Proverbs 22 and verses 24 and 25, there Solomon says, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. Losing control of your temper. Oh, it happens. But we've got to beware of extremes in emotional reactions. Either having no emotional reaction at all, or just being wildly emotional and out of control. Both are dangerous things. And both are problems that we have to avoid if we're going to have moderation in our lives. Then we want to notice we need to avoid extremes in our relationships. You know, it's an amazing thing in our society today. There are parents who are paying someone to teach their kids to ride a bike. Probably won't be long. I always thought, you know, that was something the parents did when I was a kid. I don't know. I didn't do a very good job of it. My kids don't know how to ride a bike. It's kind of sad. But we didn't really have a good place to ride on our busy street right there by the highway. But, you know, before long they'll be paying somebody to teach them how to walk and paying them to learn everything. They even have somebody has a business in New York where when they send their kids off to camp for the summer, They pay this person to come in and pack their bags for them. Do it all organized like. Our relationships have come to the point where there's not much relationship left there. 2 Timothy 3 and verses 2 through 3 warns about the time when men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers. One side of the relationship problem is that there'll be people who are disobedient to their parents and unthankful. And he says they'll be unholy. And then in verse 3 he says, without natural affection, which is the parental feeling toward the child. They'll be missing that. They won't have that. They'll be truce breakers, so you can't trust their word. How much is that going to destroy relationships? False accusers? Incontinent, which has to do with the lack of self-control. You think that sexual harassment and things like that are going on in our society today, you think that has to do with the lack of self-control? You betcha it has something to do with that. Fierce despisers of those that are good. But they're going to have all these relationship problems as a result of their sinfulness in their lives. And our relationships, well, obviously we've all heard stories about somebody who was so obsessed with one person, you know, that, and we see that with a child, when that child is so attached to mama that at some point she's got to say, okay, you got to get away from me a little bit. You've got to get out on your own. At some point, we've got to kick them out of the nest like the mama eagle, right? But then on the other hand, you see some who have no relationship at all. We've got to avoid those extremes. We want to have good relationships, solid relationships, but watch out for the extremes. And we need to avoid extremes in religion. You know, it's interesting. The word religion is only used 5 times in the New Testament. 4 out of those 5 times it's used in a negative sense. It's used in a sense of a man-made type religion. Only once pure and undefiled religion is mentioned in James chapter 1. But the other times that religion is mentioned, it was people who had gone to extremes. Listen to Acts 26, 4 and 5. Paul says, my manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among mine own nation at Jerusalem, know all the Jews, which knew me from the beginning, if they would testify, that after the most straightest the most straightest. I don't think that's good English grammar in our society today, but Paul made some emphasis there, didn't he? The most straightest sect of our religion, I lived a Pharisee. And then he explains a little bit more about that in Galatians 1, 13 and 14. For ye have heard of my conversation in time past in the Jews' religion. The Jews' religion. It wasn't God's religion, it was the Jews' religion. How that beyond measure I persecuted the church of God. See, that's what lets you know it wasn't God's, because God wouldn't have had them persecuting the church. But then he goes on to say, and wasted it, and profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals in mine own nation, being more exceedingly zealous of the tradition of my fathers. Well, they went to that extreme in their religion. They had a zeal. See, he was more exceedingly zealous of the traditions. He was less concerned with what God said and more concerned with the traditions. We've got to watch out for extremes in religion. It's easy to get caught up in trying to loose things that God has bound or in trying to bind things that God has loosed, and we better watch out. Or we'll come to the end of the road and God will say, you know, you were really faithful to your religion, but what about mine? You see, the Jews took God's religion that was revealed to them and they corrupted it until it was their religion. It wasn't His anymore. That could happen to us in the church as well. Oh, we see it happen in churches all the time where they corrupt God's Word and make it their own religion. They make their own denomination. They make their own sect instead of following God's Word. Don't think it can't happen to us too. It can. We have to constantly be on guard of going to extremes in religion. Of course, there are others who go to the extreme of religion of just not wanting to have any religion at all. The atheists, they don't want to have anything to do with religion. They speak evil of all religion, probably because all of the religion they've known was the ones that went to the other extreme. They've never known true, pure, and undefiled religion before God and the Father. Do you have a need to respond to God's invitation? We haven't covered every area in the world, but we've covered several. Maybe some other area where you've had trouble with going to extremes. Maybe you need to respond to the invitation and repent of that sin and get yourself back into moderation, as Philippians 4:5 tells us. Get back on the straight and narrow instead of being off to the left or the right. If you need to respond to God's invitation this morning, please do so as we stand and as we sing.